From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. Our technical director is Jason Croft, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. My name is Celeste Quinn. Today, we open up the phone lines for questions about computers. This is a topic we take up once a month on the first Thursday of the month. Whether you're looking for a new computer, have questions about online security, or need some troubleshooting advice, Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick are here, and they are ready to lend a hand. Debbie is a network engineer for CITES. CITES is the acronym for Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services, and that's at the University of Illinois. Jim is a security engineer for NCSA, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the university. Listeners, join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Debbie, Jim, welcome back. Good to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
Thanks for coming over here in this dreary weather. Not a very nice day.
Not good for your electronics. Keep them dry.
Yeah, okay, very good. Well, I have a question. Someone wrote to me. I have a 2-year-old MacBook still running Leopard. I hadn't seen any reason to update the operating system until recently, when I downloaded a software update and the machine said it couldn't install it because the operating system was too old. Should I expect to encounter this problem in the future? Should I at least update to Snow Leopard? Should I go all the way to Lion?
Well, the first part of the answer is absolutely update at least to Snow Leopard. Apple only supports two OSs with security patches. The most recent two. So right now that's Lion and Snow Leopard. There won't be security fixes even for plain old Leopard. So as far as if you're going to be on the internet at all, you really want to be running at least Snow Leopard so you get those security patches. Upgrading all the way to Lion, there's a lot of new features and it does a lot of things different. I think that's going forward, more programs will expect the things Lion offers. Things will work better under Lion as you get new versions of your other programs. But do you absolutely need to do that now? Not really. I think you have to be running Snow Leopard to buy the Lion client. Uh-huh. So you do have to, you can't, I don't know that you can go from 10.5 straight to 10.7. I'm not sure what that licensing is because you buy Lion through the App Store and the App Store runs on 10.6. I think you can buy Lion in a retail version in a box on a USB key, but I'm not sure it'll upgrade straight from 10.5 or not. That would need a little bit of research.
Okay, so that's something to look into. And as far as the learning curve on Lion, you said it looks a little different, but is there anything really that would hang you up if you're an Apple user?
I recently moved to it on my work laptop, and if you want to keep doing basically everything the way you did in Snow Leopard, you can. There are extra things in there that are part of the Lion upgrade that I don't use yet. So I think it was pretty painless moving from Snow Leopard to Lion. And then, like I said, if you want to take the time to figure out the new Lion features, you can.
What kind of new features are in there that you haven't found useful yet anyway?
A lot of the applications let you move into full screen view. So you can go into Mail and give it the full screen. But when you're in Mail, normally it like opens a separate window to compose a new email or to do a search. You might end up where you see different windows. And in Lion, when you're in the full screen view, there are little pop-up windows and you can't do other things or look at a back piece of email. It takes over. You only get to do the one thing you're doing at the moment. And I've found that to be difficult to get the hang of because I tend to work with tons of windows open.
Right.
And I'm doing this thing over here and I'm referencing... I might be referencing a web browser window or I might be referencing something else and I'm in only Mail. So that's something I don't use very heavily at all. But I think some people who like to focus on one thing at a time would find it great because it takes over the whole screen. You get a little bit more real estate for it. You're in that one app and nothing else pops up and gets in your way or anything like that.
Okay, very good. Now we have a question by email. My son is graduating from high school this spring. And I'm trying to decide what the best type of computer is to get him for college. With so many options, desktop, laptop, iPad, and so on, what do you think will be the best option for him at a university that I won't have to replace every year.
I think you need to start by going to the department that he's going to enroll in for his major and actually find out if they have specific requirements for hardware or specific suggestions. I mean, that's the start, is if you're going to go into a program and they're like, oh, by the way, the software only comes on Windows machines, you probably don't want to show up with a MacBook. If you go now with MacBooks, I mean, the wireless, correct me if I'm wrong, Debbie, I think that they're all ABGN wireless.
Yeah.
So if you go with a Windows machine, it's important that when you look for, because if you're going to have a laptop anymore on campus, you're going to be using wireless. You're probably never going to plug it into an Ethernet jack to get a network connection. It's all going to be wireless. And what we've run into on campus this fall is a lot of students came in with laptops that only supported what's BGN, so the 2.4 gigahertz frequency. And that's the one that's the most busy. That's basically what everybody's home devices are. And since everybody's laptop can only use that frequency in a large lecture hall, they're having problems with capacity of being able to stay connected and get things fast. So the Ethernet or the wireless cards that you want to look for are ABGN, and it's not just the N that makes it magic. You need the A on it because that tells you that it operates in what's the 5 gigahertz frequencies, which are there's more of them and they're less used, so you'll get higher speed. And it'll be more reliable in classrooms.
Okay, so that's ABGN wireless card.
Right.
Okay.
Lots of memory. I've certainly seen that on my desktop recently, is that my machine sits there all day long with at least 2.5 gigabytes of RAM in use, which is just amazing to me considering I started off on machines with less than 512K. But I think that 4 gig of RAM is probably the minimum that you should buy with a laptop now.
If you buy one of the new MacBook Pros, you want to get 8.
Okay. And 4 gigs the minimum. I'm considering that the fact that maybe 6 or 8, probably on a laptop, 4 probably for most people will be fine. Debbie has more experience with the new MacBook, so.
Yeah, I got my, excuse me, my new MacBook from work. And just running what I consider the basic 3 or 4 applications, which is like mail and web, and I have a terminal window open, maybe one other program, I find that with only 4 gig of RAM, I often run out. It's constantly swapping to disk. And I ran the same operating system on an older version of the hardware before I got this one, and it was fine with 4 gig of RAM. So, and there's a lot of reports on the internet that they're very slow and sluggish with only 4 gig. On the other side, you can buy an upgrade from one of the third-party places like Crucial or OMC for $55 to go from 4 to 8. You don't necessarily need to pay Apple to start yourself out with 8.
Okay, very good. And the listener has a follow-up I should probably mention. My son will be going into engineering, so he'll need higher-end mathematics. So that's also something to...
Yeah, I'm not sure what the engineering, and it depends what university, and even this one, I don't know what they require. A lot of places, if it's for specialized, really high-end software, they'll actually have you remote in to one of their computer labs or a server they have in some closet, so you don't actually need a high-horsepower machine to be able to do that. So, but definitely, I think to start with is to go to their website and say, hey, what, you know, let's start with Mac or Windows, because I honestly... I don't want to hear any jeers about Linux, but I honestly don't. I really doubt that any university out there says, "Oh no, you should bring a Linux laptop." So it's going to be Mac or Windows, and then, you know, if it ends up being Mac and you go with the MacBook Pro, there's not a lot of choices to pick in one of those. If it's a Windows machine, obviously you have to start with what manufacturer and stuff, and they may say, "Hey, you know, we provide a little bit of support, or a help desk will help you out. And if you get, you know, a Dell or an HP or a Toshiba or something like that, they're pretty familiar with those. They're going to be able to help you out better." So I would definitely go to, you don't want to show up on the day and they say, "Oh, we don't want you to have that one."
Yeah. Okay. Very good. And in terms of how long a piece of machinery is going to last a student over the course of 4 or 5 years of study, what do you think?
For me, laptops are usually 3-year investments, 3 to 4. You get to, starting at the end of the third year and the fourth year, you're starting to go, wow, I really need a new laptop. Whereas desktops, you can swap out the video card, maybe add some more RAM, and you can add, you know, upgrade the hard drive, and you can extend the life of a desktop PC. Laptops, it gets to the point, and, you know, the hinges start to get loose, and you're like, and the battery's not lasting very long, and you're like, you know, all the stuff that needs, this thing needs fixed, maybe it's just time for a new one. And to me, for me, that usually happens somewhere in year three. I don't know if what's Debbie's experience.
Pretty much similar, Jim. What I'd say is a decision to make there is, if he's going to a 4-year engineering program, and he's going to start with the general ed type courses for the first couple years, you might get a lower power notebook that you don't spend as much money on, and plan on replacing it with a nice high end notebook when he starts his core curriculum classes, when he's needing more of that math and things like that. You know, two years or 2.5 years in, then you'll also have a much better idea what to get him. That might be a good way to compromise depending on what your budget situation is.
Okay. This is Focus, and we're talking this morning about computers with Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with a phone call or by email. The phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. Phones are kind of quiet at the moment, so if you've got a question, maybe it's a good time to get in, as usually at the end of the show we get a lot of calls and then we're stuck. So, well, let's go back to some questions that I had for you. Any word on the experience people have had with Apple iOS 5? Lots of Apple questions today, Debbie.
Boy, I know what my experience has been, which has been that it's pretty nice. I don't have one of the new iPhones, but I put it on my iPad and my older iPhone 3GS, and it runs pretty well. It doesn't crash. Those are always good places to start. There have definitely been a few apps that have had problems upgrading to iOS 5. Their new versions have had a few bugs to shake out, but they've upgraded them pretty quickly. I haven't really noticed much that's really different. It just works all the same old stuff. I don't have the fancy new Siri or anything like that to talk about.
So. No, or to talk with. I over the last day or two, though, we have had some news coverage about the iPhone 4S and the iOS 5 and battery drain. And they're working on that now, I guess. But in USA Today, at the bottom of the article here, the fact that Apple said the bugs lie within the iOS 5 suggests other products may be affected, including the iPad, iPod Touch, iPhone 4, and 3GS. So have you guys had any comments from friends, neighbors, colleagues about battery life?
I haven't heard any from the people I know that have iDevices about battery drain. I've seen it more on the tech blogs, the news, than from actually anybody that I work with that has an Apple phone. So I don't know if it's not that wide, if it's not really widespread, you know, like every device, or if it's just they charge their phones enough that it doesn't matter to them.
No. What does iOS 5 give Apple users?
I think the biggest thing is iCloud plus Siri. The photo streaming, if you took a picture on your iPad or iPod, you had to upload it to iPhoto before you could send it off to something else, or you had to go in and email it. You can make a free iCloud account and have your iPod and your iPad exchange any pictures you take on them. So if you took it on one, it'll show up on the other. iCloud replaced their Mobile Me, so it gives you a free email account. Mobile Me had email, iCloud doesn't. It lets you shove files up and down. If you use Apple's iWork product like Pages or Numbers on your phone and on your desktop, you can share files between them without having to save them or move them back and forth. It's little steps like that.
Yeah. Somebody asked me to ask the two of you, if we were slow on calls today, about the Cloud 101. Just some basic information about what it is and where we're headed with this thing.
The cloud is storing your files on servers that are attached via the internet, and they're servers that you don't manage. So Google or the Apple products. And there's a few other ones. There's Dropbox, things like that. And they have different purposes. You have the ones that are the photo sharing ones. So you have Picasa Web, Flickr. Any others you want to? There's others. I'm just not off the top of my head. And then you have things like the Google Apps storage, where you can have spreadsheets, Word documents, PDF files stored. Then you have the other ones like Dropbox, where it's actual, and I think, correct me, the Apple Cloud service, it stores whole files, right? You can actually copy whatever you want up to it, or no?
Yes and no. There's a hidden folder that if you go and find it, you can put documents in, but it's currently, as far as the user interface is concerned, it's from inside applications only.
Okay.
The computer side of it is a web dev type interface. You don't actually, it's not like Dropbox where you just get access to a folder. There's some hope that as they enhance some of their software products, like, for example, their iWork platform is still their 2009 version, that perhaps it will move to that, but it's not yet.
So things like Dropbox are basically like a USB key. Put any files you want on it, and wherever you go, you can log in, and there's your Dropbox. And they have synchronization and other things where you can have a folder on your computer, I believe, that synchronizes with Dropbox, so you can have that same folder on your laptop and your desktop, and it'll synchronize the files. I'm not a user of it, so I'm not familiar with all the different features that it can offer. I do use the Google products, so I upload a lot of pictures and share those with family via Picasa Web. And then I also upload and use some of the, for sharing, just a spreadsheet app on Google. We don't want to confuse Microsoft products here. And Word, or document files, Word format files.
Okay. Let's take a call. This is a listener in Urbana on line one. Good morning.
Hi.
I'm
not sure where to start looking to solve my problem. Basically, we have Netflix and a fairly new desktop computer, which used to receive the movies just fine. Now, for some time, a movie can only play for a certain amount of time, and then it will have to reload, and you have to go back and, you know, start again with Netflix. Is this a computer issue, a modem issue, a Netflix issue? Where would I start looking to solve this so that the movies played as they used to?
Well, if it was an internet problem, I would suspect that, and I don't, is, I mean, does the error message say something like buffering or connection timed out?
It says loading, and it just, the movie will stop and freeze, and then a long horizontal bar will come across that says loading, and it'll say that it's reloading. But in fact, to get the movie to resume, you have to go backward in the Netflix windows and tell it to start again.
Okay. Is there a specific amount of time that this happens, or is it fairly random?
I couldn't say a specific amount. It's an annoying amount.
Sure. You know, and like you brought up, it could be a lot of different issues. I mean, it could be that your internet connection is not keeping up, and then there's a problem, and for some reason the Netflix isn't restarting correctly. It could be your machine's doing something in the background. So if you have a friend that can bring a laptop over and hook it up to your Ethernet at home and try to do Netflix on that, maybe we can solve what, you know, figure out if that'll eliminate whether it's your computer or your internet, maybe. Point to the right place. As far as on your machine, make sure that you have all of your various browser plugins updated. You might also try opening up the Netflix movies in a different browser. Which one are you using currently?
Firefox.
Okay. I mean, you might try just opening up in Internet Explorer. I'm not sure if Netflix streams in Chrome or not. But, yeah, you could just try a different browser, installing whatever the minimum number of plugins are to make Netflix work in that browser and see what it does. You could also try disabling antivirus scans, either stopping hard drive scans or even temporarily disabling your antivirus program, and then see what happens, just to try to pinpoint down what is causing this issue.
Now, disabling the antivirus, completely, that would just be a temporary diagnostic measure, which you certainly don't want to be running the movie and not at the cost of the antivirus.
Yeah, most likely. It would be best to just find out why, if it turns out to be the antivirus, it'd be best to just find out why the AV is causing it a problem. Although, if you're not surfing the web at all and don't have your email open and things, and even email's not too big a deal there, in general, if all you're doing is watching a Netflix film, you could probably get away with actually disabling the antivirus for the length of the film and turning it back on when you're done. Because there's nothing, if there shouldn't be any other file exchanges or downloading from the internet except for the Netflix movie, and that's not going to have a virus in it. So I would feel pretty safe in disabling it if through your troubleshooting that was the problem.
And just to follow up on your earlier suggestion, if we try a good laptop on the same Comcast connection, and it does the same thing on the Netflix, where would that point us to, or what would that eliminate?
Well, it should eliminate issues specific to your desktop, and then you can start looking at, okay, is my router acting poorly? Is my Comcast connection, has it degraded? Am I doing it in the middle? So another thing to try maybe is at a really late or early time. Because the internet, your internet service providers tend to have peak times, usually after work through the evening. Try starting up and watching a movie at 7 in the morning or earlier if you're up that early, and see if it can go all the way through. Now, that won't necessarily, you'll also need to check to make sure that if it works then, so that would point to two things. If it works at 7 in the morning but doesn't work at 7 at night, is that either your internet service provider is busy at 7 at night as opposed to in the morning, or there's a scheduled scan happening on your hard drive at 7 at night. A hard drive, an antivirus scan, a malware scan, or a hard drive health check or a defrag kind of operation. So, but that would lead you in, it's more information to have. But if both devices, a laptop, somebody brings a laptop over that does that works elsewhere but doesn't work at your house, that's where I would look at, maybe I need to replace my router, maybe, or just power it off, power it back on, or maybe do a hard reset on it, reset all its settings and start over because maybe something's not configured correctly anymore. It hiccuped, so to speak. Or possibly that, your cable line going into your house is actually degraded and you're not getting a very good signal. It's a good enough signal to surf the internet, but it's not a good enough signal to maintain a high baud rate stream from Netflix.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Good luck with that. And we have another question by email. I'm wanting to help my dad with his computer using remote assistance. He's running Windows 7, but I only have Windows XP. Is that possible? Is it possible to get this to work? Do I have to set up port forwarding on his router?
And that's what makes remote assistance a pain. So Debbie's going to tell us about the one that she helps her parents with, or your mom with, right?
Oh, I haven't done it remotely in a long time.
Oh.
I say the little bit of remote I do for Windows, I use remote desktop, not remote assistance.
Remote desktop's difficult to do to somebody else's house because you'd have to set up port forwarding through their router across the internet. So TeamViewer, right? Isn't that the... I think that's the one that both you and I used last time we were helping family remotely.
I haven't done it for a couple of years. I don't remember.
It's a program that I believe it's a commercial program. However, for home viewers or home use, I believe it is. It's free, and in fact, that's on their webpage. TeamViewer, it's some free remote access for non-commercial use. So that's one that I use for remote help of family members. So that's TeamViewer.com, and you do not have to set up port forwarding. Then all you have to do is walk the remote party into downloading and running the program. In fact, and you can either install it or just run it. I usually just have them run it, and then a screen runs and it has an account number or a password or something like that, and they tell you those over the phone. You type them in, and then you remote connect to their desktop.
And it's secure as long as you can't listen to the phone call.
Right. Well, and when you're done helping them, have them close the program, and then it's not running anymore. Unlike remote desktop or remote assistant, where it would be a little more difficult for you to walk them through undoing the changes you made to get those programs to work. Whereas this one, we just close the program and it's done. Nobody can reconnect your computer again until you run it again.
Okay, and is the issue of the flavors of Windows, and is that an issue, Windows 7, Windows XP?
No, I don't believe that TeamViewer will have an issue running on either one of those. I can't remember the last time I ran it on both, but I'm fairly certain I've at least run it on Windows 7 and Vista, and I'm not positive of XP, but I would guess that it works. It would be best to just go to their website and check it out or just give it a go.
Okay, very good. This is Focus, and this morning we're talking about computers with Jim Irick and Debbie Flagger. They're with the University of Illinois. Debbie is a network engineer for Sites. That is the Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services. And Jim is a security engineer for NCSA, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the university. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with questions, comments. Join us by email or with a phone call. The phone number is 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. More after a short break.
On the next Fresh Air, the Great Tech War of 2012, we talk with Farhad Manju about how Apple, Google, Amazon, and Facebook are on the verge of war against each other. Manju's article about this is in Fast Company. He's a technology columnist for Slate. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois. Now featuring new exhibits entitled A Century of Stories and Sounds from the Stage, Music, Dance, and Theater in America. More information is at sousaarchives.org.
This is Focus, and we're talking this morning about computers with Jim Irick and Debbie Flagger. And we have another caller joining us now. This is a listener in Sycamore on line 4. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm wondering if either of your guests can suggest where I can find a dial-up modem for use with a modern Mac laptop. Has USB ports.
We talked about this last time, actually. It's not an Apple product. I believe is it Belkin or US Robotics? And it is USB for Mac, and it comes with drivers that work on Lion.
Oh, okay. That would be, let's see, I have a Snow Leopard.
Oh, it'll work on those too.
The
problem was that that Apple stopped including drivers for their own brand modem with Lion. So users that were actually with dial-up modem still that had upgraded Lion could no longer use their Apple modems. So we went and found this other brand, and it works on Lion and older versions.
Okay, great.
And we'll see if we can find the brand and let you know when we find it.
Okay, thanks again.
The other thing would be that because the Lion users can't use their little USB modems from Apple, you should be able to find a good deal on those on eBay or something like that.
Oh.
Since you're running Snow Leopard, they'll still work.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And, Debbie, you said you had some more information about going from Leopard right to Lion and skipping
It looks like you can do that with no problem. You need to go buy the USB version from the store instead of downloading it from the App Store. People had a few problems migrating their data, but they did release a patch to 10.5 to the Migration Assistant so that it's now compatible with Lion. So you should be able to upgrade straight to Lion if you buy the application in a box. So it's a little more expensive than buying it from the App Store, but essentially you're buying the license for Snow Leopard and the license for Lion, and you get it on a USB key instead of downloading it over the Internet.
Okay. Hey, question here. If you have two laptops, you've got two machines that you want to upgrade to Lion that are running Leopard, would that Can you use it on both machines?
You should be able to. The license agreement that you sign for Lion, at least when you download it from the App Store, is that it's good for up to 5 personal machines. So I believe they had some wordage about being in the same household or, you know, basically your own family, not you and your grandma in this other house and your aunt over here, right? But I believe you're entitled to run it on up to 5 machines.
Okay, very good. This is Focus. We're talking about computers. Listeners, questions, comments are invited. We'd love to hear from you this morning. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. will-talk@illinois.edu.
And I did find that at least one modem that says it's Mac 10.4 or later compatible, and it's a U.S. Robotics USB fax modem.
Okay, very good. So I haven't looked at my Gmail for a little while, but I understand that there's a redesigned interface coming or is here. Either of you have any info about what that's about and what it'll provide us?
Either I don't have it yet on mine, or it was so subtle that it didn't go, oh, wow, something changed. So I'm not sure, because there hasn't been an issue lately where I went, well, I don't really like what they did, because I'm fairly used to the way it works, and I'm not big on all of a sudden, oh, look, things changed. Google changed their RSS feed, which is Google Reader, the interface for that this week. And I couldn't even tell you exactly what they did without looking at them side by side, but I just know I'm not as comfortable reading the new one as the old one. So maybe I'll get used to it.
We can hope that it's better and it's not hard to get used to.
Right.
And we've got a call coming in, a listener on line one, and we'll go ahead and take this call now. Good morning, Urbana.
Hi, this is I'm really excited about your show. I've been on IT as a first career, and I kind of miss it, but it's fun to listen to the show because I get to remember the days when I was up to my elbows in systems. My question relates to 4 systems that I bought from Borders before they went under, and these nice little XP, nothing fancy systems have been a lot of fun to kind of figure out how to configure for home use. My question is, there are network cards, but there are no wireless modem cards or wireless cards that I can use to connect to the Internet. So I'm trying to decide how to, I've done a little research online. They could use some upgrades on the video cards, but I'm probably not even going to bother to do that. But I do want to get them on the Internet. So any suggestions? I mean, I could probably run a network, you know, a cable from the network card to my modem and hook them into my router directly, but my cable modem, you know, my DSL is actually kind of far from where I would like to set these up, so I really don't like the idea of running a wire. So what do you think in terms of a wireless connection that's easy? I have several USB ports I could use.
Yeah, that would be my first guess, would be just a wireless USB adapter.
Okay.
There's several manufacturers, you know, make sure that one that says it comes with XP drivers, because we are at the, I think, 10th anniversary of Windows XP just passed.
Right.
So I have no problem with manufacturers not producing drivers for XP anymore.
Right.
So now the other issue is that I would be concerned, and we're not to this point yet, because my XP has been so popular, Microsoft has gone past what they normally do, I think, for stopping security rollouts for an operating system.
Right.
But we are certainly getting close to that date where that it's going to be unsafe, in my opinion, to have an XP machine connected to the Internet and surfing the Internet on it. Eventually, we'll need to move from XP to Windows 7 machines. Everybody can skip Vista, you know, the
right.
That everybody hated, apparently, except for me. But, well, once it got to Service Pack 1, it was pretty good. So that's all my only concern is, I don't know, without doing some research, I don't know what the date is for that now. So don't spend a lot of money, although USB wireless NIC shouldn't be a lot of money anyway, on a machine that you may end up going, wow, I shouldn't be surfing the Internet on this anymore.
Yeah. Right, and we're not planning to do a, I mean, we're going to have one as a backup system and another one as a kid's system, so they're not going to be doing, hopefully, too much heavy lifting, although the way kids surf the Internet these days, who knows. Now, I actually pay, and I have found that the free versions of certain virus scanning Internet software that helps protect my systems have not worked as well as the paid-for version, so I pay for, I use AVG now, Avast crashed my system one time, and I've been real happy with that. Is that, I understand what you're saying about the security updates for XP, and certainly there could be other holes that are discovered and et cetera, but it seems like for a while the AVG might give me some decent protection for now.
Well, an antivirus program is, I mean, it scans files as they come in and out, basically,
right.
And you can add it into some of their firewall stuff. An antivirus program is not going to protect you from exploits in the operating system, not all
right.
of them anyway.
Right.
So I don't actually equal having an antivirus to something that makes up for not getting security patches.
Yeah.
You know, I've never even thought about it much, but it's just right now thinking about it is that I don't think that's a good substitute. So I would not make that say, I would not say that. And as far as free, certainly about antivirus programs, free and paid. I mean, that's why there's two versions, right? The free is for you to install it, show that it works. And then the paid gets you the extra features like automatic updates and some of the additional scanning and things.
Right.
For free ones out there that don't do that, that don't have a commercial version, Microsoft Security Essentials, I believe it'll run on Windows XP. That's a free one that there's no nags to buy it. It's just Security Essentials. It doesn't have all the whiz-bang stuff that some of the other programs do, like it utilizes the Windows firewall as opposed to having its own, things like that. But I've had good luck with that one.
Okay. Oh, and I reversed the names of my two virus programs. AVG was the one that crushed my system, and Avast was the one that I decided I really liked. But I did find that if I, you know, on a friend system that needed a scan, when I ran the AVG version that was free, it did not find a virus. I downloaded and paid for the free, paid version, within minutes, and it found a virus and cleaned it up. So I think people sometimes have the misconception that that free is just as good as the paid version, and they really are not. They're not the, I understand that's their business and that's the business they're in, but I think people sometimes think, oh, well, I ran a free scan and there's no virus on here, and that's not necessarily true. So thanks for your help. That's really helpful.
Thanks for the call. We've got another listener in Urbana waiting to talk with us. This is a listener on line two. Hi. Line two, hi.
Hi. This is Bacha. I have two questions. I want to buy a laptop right now, and I am thinking about whether to go for Macintosh or Windows 7. So I'm not yet decided, so hope your guest will help me to decide. And the second question is, so if I buy a Mac, if I install Windows 7 on it as a boot camp, by using boot camp, so can I get the same performance of Windows 7 when I install inside the Mac? So that's all my questions. So I will get my answers online. I will cut the call right now. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Well, you can certainly install Windows 7 on a Mac in Boot Camp. And with Boot Camp, which is free with the purchase of the Mac, you install it so that you choose which you use. You're either in Windows or you're in Mac. And when you're in Windows, it takes over the Intel computer. It's just as good as any other vendor's computer with those specs. That much RAM, that speed processor and everything else. You really shouldn't see a difference in performance than an equivalent PC with those specs. So as far as can you run it and will it run, absolutely. It'll run just as well when it's in boot camp mode. If you want to invest in third-party software such as Parallels or VMware, you can also tell it to let you run Windows inside that software from your boot camp partition using all the files you've got there, all the software you've got installed there, while macOS is also running. That performance is degraded because you've got macOS running and it's sitting running inside a program. But if you have something quick you need to do in Windows, you can do that without stopping to reboot and to go back. You didn't really say what kind of help you wanted in deciding whether to go from Windows 7 to Mac. For your average user, as long as the software you want to use most of the time has a Mac version, you know, it's all GUI-based. You point, you click, you start your apps, and it's really is the application you want available in the OS is probably the biggest choice to make, in my opinion. Jim, you might have more of an opinion.
Don't I always? Well, you know, I have a Mac in front of me right now. I have a Windows 7 machine at home. You know, there is, you can get into the laptop market for less money with a Microsoft Windows machine, certainly than a Mac. So I think, you know, if you're trying to really pinch pennies and you don't really care what operating system you get, you just want something that you can surf the internet and do standard little office, you know, document kind of things. For the amount of money, a Windows machine, I think, is a better deal. But then there are things like Mac laptops. I think it's an amazing design. They're solidly built. In fact, the new ones, the unibody ones, are constructed out of a single piece of aluminum. You know, the hinges last, I think they do really well compared to some of the other Wintel machines I've had. So I think, and now, so if money's not an issue, I think you need to go to the Apple store. You need to play with the laptop. You need to pick it up. You need to feel how much it weighs. You need to go to a big box store in town and look at their laptops and see what they have to offer and how you like those. Look at the screen in different lights. I think Apple's going to, you know, they have Apple, I'm not sure if they still offer it or not. They used to have two different glare and not.
They do still offer an anti-glare screen. You pay more. It's a premium. The more glossy, brighter colors, you know, the brighter, vibrant screen, which also happens to reflect your image a little bit more in it, is the default. I believe from the research we did, at least at university prices, which I know are not always the same thing as real-life prices, that a similarly sized and configured Windows system that had the same CPU, same speed, and the same monitor resolution was actually starting to get close in price from some vendors to that of the Apple laptop. But there are a lot more medium to lower end, which might meet your needs just fine.
On the
Windows side, but not on the Mac side. Right. If you want the high end, sometimes the Mac is even a better deal for some things. But on the medium to the low end, the Windows market has it cornered.
Okay. What is a new MacBook weigh these days?
I really couldn't tell you without...
I mean, it looks so much thinner than mine.
They're not lightweight.
No, they're not, but it is. I think it's a little lighter than...
But they're not bad.
Yeah.
We've come a long way from the old compact luggables that were, you know, 30 pounds.
Yeah. Last night on Channel WLTV, they had a documentary on Steve Jobs, and it was really fun to see some of the old, you know, the very first machines. It was amazing. Even, you know, even looking back on them now, you know, they're still very attractive. You know what? That old box. Remember the
Mac
know?
Or the Apple?
Yeah.
Or both. Actually, they were pretty interesting. Even the old Apple was, you know, an attempt to be very...
As compared to the Intel machines that were just the standard beige box with the power switch on the side.
Yeah.
5.6 pounds for a 15-inch notebook from Apple.
Okay. This is Focus. We're talking about computers. We've got maybe about 8 minutes left in this portion of the program. So if you've got a question or a comment to add to the discussion this morning, give us a call or drop us an email message. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL, 333-WILL. The email address will-talk@illinois.edu. And we've got a listener joining us now on line one. Good morning.
Hi, I have another question. I called before.
Okay.
So I have a question about the virus problem with Mac and Windows PC. So always the Windows PC will be coupled with virus programs and antivirus programs, but Mac, is really necessary to have antivirus program or not?
I think it depends a lot on what your comfort level is. There are not nearly as many viruses available for the Mac, but there are some. There are also things that would be more like macro issues for Microsoft Word or other similar problems that aren't necessarily attacking the operating system. Although overall, now the university requires us to run with antivirus installed, so we do, but I don't bother necessarily on my home Macintoshes, but I absolutely do on my home Windows machines. If you or any of the people using it tend to click on purpose or on accidents on weird ads or other things, either in email or on web pages, antivirus of some kind is a good idea just to kind of clean up. If you're super, if you've got the kind of personality where you're super careful that you wait and you double check, does this look like a valid link? Have I heard of this place before? I'm going to check it out before I click on it. Then on a Mac, I think there's, I see less need to have some kind of antivirus software installed.
Okay. So is the university providing any antivirus software for Mac?
They do provide free antivirus software for Mac. I don't know if we have a version that works with Lion or not. I definitely know we have a version that's free that works with Snow Leopard.
Okay.
We will research that.
If we don't, we should soon. Security takes that very seriously.
Okay. So is the university getting any deals to get a new Mac, like discount programs?
Apple does occasionally run discount programs. The local stores do as well. Usually the stuff from Apple is more like buy a Mac, get a free iPod, or buy a Mac, get a free printer. What I see at like the Illini Flash Drive here in town would be where I get an email from them saying, hey, they've announced a new Mac, and it's now 2.2 gigahertz. I've still got some 2.0 gigahertz. Get them for a couple $100 off. So it was new 6 months ago, you know, so it's the one step down from the newest, but here you can get a few $100 off or something like that, or overstock sales, things like that. Not too many flat out discounts. My understanding, especially if you can get it at the educational price, they're already running right against their profit margin because the educational price is a little bit better than retail.
Thank you for your help. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. And next we go to a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi. I just have a question because I teach large gen ed, general education courses in Greg Hall and currently in the National Soybean Center and so on. And I noticed that up until last year, because I use PowerPoints with lots of, you know, funny things I use in there, and with the PowerPoints, and suddenly it's freezing on every computer I'm on. I give guest lectures and it freezes on several parts of campus. So I hope somebody knows about this, and I don't know the reason why that would happen, but my guess is these computers are getting older or there's some kind of problem. But it is a hassle. It literally freezes. So I give lectures, and I have to just, you know, repeatedly click to, you know, apologize to the students because the computer's having a problem. And yeah, that's just something that I'm sure a lot of other professors have noticed on campus.
So I believe that if these are general classrooms, I believe that the contact for that is Sites Classroom Technology handles that.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that they have their own phone number and email contact to let them know. And they're very serious about making sure that stuff is up and running. And usually fairly responsive, too. Give them send them an email, let them know what rooms and what time so they can figure out what the... what was going on, as much information as certainly as you can provide them.
Exactly.
And I am sure that they will work with you to figure out what the deal is.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Boy, what a pain that would be.
It looks like ClassTech has an online problem report form. If you go to classtech.sites.illinois.edu, you should be able to get there. It's got a report a problem link, and you get to select what room you had the problem in, what kind of problem you had, and fill out a report. That should get to them very quickly.
Okay. And another email question. The CD-DVD tray on my PC no longer opens. Is this a problem I can possibly deal with myself, or is professional help the only way?
If you're comfortable taking the site off your computer, then you could try it yourself. So my suggestion, if you push the button and it doesn't open or close and it doesn't make any really bad grinding sounds or anything, would be to turn the machine off and unplug it, take the panel off the side of the machine, and there should be usually two connections going into the back of the DVD drive. Pull those out and then plug them back in and turn the machine on and see what happens. The other thing to do is to try to push the button to have it open and close while it's booting up before it's booted all the way into its operating system, because there's a possibility that there's actually something in the operating system that's set that has that locked. So if it opens and closes before you boot into, I'm just going to guess Windows, then once Windows boots, it won't open and close anymore. I would probably search online for solutions to locked CD tray.
What do you guys do with your old computers?
I take them to the recycler.
Do you?
Yeah. After I remove the hard drive.
Okay. Yeah. And one of these days soon, you're going to have to dispose of your electronics responsibly, right? Isn't there a law that they're not supposed to go into the landfill?
I would hope people aren't doing that now. What I do is I usually have a like a milk crate kind of thing, and I just throw all the little personal electronics and everything else in there. That's where they go to die. And when it's full enough, I just take it out to, there's a couple, either you can do one of the free ones that the cities have once in a while. They have the free drop-off.
RPC, yeah.
And then also there's a couple of recycling facilities in town that will accept that stuff every day of the year, or, business days.
Okay, very good. Well, there we will leave it. We're out of time. I want to thank the two of you so much for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We'll see you in January. Could that be?
Should be.
Wow. All right. Well, happy holidays.
Thanks.
You
too.
Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick, they'll be back with us in January on the first Thursday of the month to talk about computers.